The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Question from the chat line. Hi, Matthew. A blunt way to put my question would be, do you really think Trump is suffering inside or losing sleep over all the unskillfulness he puts into the world? Sometimes it seems to me that there's a freedom at both ends of the awareness spectrum, and that suffering is not necessarily a monotonically decreasing function of awareness. This has been coming up for me recently. I find it relatively easy to feel compassion for someone who behaves unskillfully, causes harm to the people around them if I can feel into their pain. But I struggle when it seems that even if there's some deep pain inside them, there's so little awareness, they do not recognize or experience it as such. If your leg is painful, but you do not feel the pain, does it really hurt? I guess my real question is about letting go of resentment. In these cases, I find it difficult to let go of it because it feels as though my resentment is the only thing bearing witness to the harm that's been caused. This is not the whole of me, but a young part of me that feels that someone should remember the harm. And if it is not them, then it has to be me. Otherwise, it feels as though it will be as if it never happened. I was wondering if you could speak to that. And as you probably realize, my question is not really about Trump. Many thanks if you choose to answer my question with metta. So I don't know who wrote that, submitted anonymously, but they probably determined that if they used the phrase monotonically decreasing function of awareness, that I'm such a sucker for statistical language that I was going to take the bait. And here I am. Yeah, your deranged little manipulation worked perfectly, and I'm taking the bait. So I'll say some things about spiritual practice, but in many respects, I don't consider inner experience to be as important as stopping the harm. So that's the kind of framework of this. So this is not the main question, but the first question is, does awareness and suffering always co-vary? In other words, like if awareness is going down, does suffering always go up? Or is it possible to be living in a different kind of moral universe, shrouded in vast, deep delusion, and still be happy? I'm not sure, you know. I think there can be certainly a great deal of pleasure. That's different than satisfaction, though. And even if there is pleasure, we know wisdom and compassion are the only bulwark against the terror of death. I think to some extent, you're asking, is it possible to be devoid of all conscience and concern and still be kind of happy? And unfortunately, yeah, I don't know, but I think it is possible. I wish that our hedonic system more deeply punished psychopathy, but it seems not to. You know, and I think it's hard for people without psychopathy to imagine the inner life of a psychopath. It's very, very different from what I can tell. And, but I think you're right. The question is, it's really a question about resentment and moral responsibility of witnessing bearing witness. When someone does tremendous harm, it mobilizes a great deal of feeling in us. And when we're powerless or nearly completely powerless to prevent that harm, there's even more feeling. Hatred just comes up very strongly. And it feels like to bear witness is to hate. And maybe we want our hatred to do what our love could not. It's as if, it feels as if our moral responsibility requires hate. It feels as if my love compels my hate. That the love I feel, the moral revulsion that I feel, compels me to hate. We consult our teacher. Hatred does not cease by hatred, but by non-hatred alone. For animals such as ourselves, where we're doing something quite difficult, we are purifying our care and untangling it from hate. But we're animals whose kind of moral machinery evolved from much more primitive systems. Hannah Chapman, researcher, emotion researcher, says disgust, she writes, plays an important role in morality. The commonality between physical and moral disgust illustrates the elegant pragmatism of brain design, whereby a new set of abstract social triggers is attached to an ancient motivational system originating in the rejection of aversive and potentially poisonous tastes. This co-option may have been driven by the association between disgust and withdrawal motivation, which could have been a valuable addition to the behavioral repertoire of our highly social species. Rotting food disgusts us. We wouldn't eat it. Hideous ethical conduct disgusts us. We want to punish it. And disgust and hate probably live in the same neighborhood. And then we look for a channel into which our disgust can flow. A lot of what we do is look for channels into which the kilesas can flow. And the notion that there is a hell to which bad people go strikes me as a kind of expression of hate. Or the principle of karma in its most extreme version, where there's a kind of perfect bookkeeping system going on, and the bad people will suffer the worst fate. That might be an expression of hatred too. Remember in college reading Nietzsche and say, like, the was caught by his depiction of that much of what we call justice, quote, justice, is often just a bloodthirsty wish for revenge, vengeance. And our empathic capacity need not witness their suffering. That may be just another way in which we try to make them more sympathetic, or another way of enjoying their suffering. Making sure maybe they're not pulling a fast one on our moral community. What is the deepest way of saying no? It feels like the volume of my hatred is what signifies the depth of my care. And what is unbearable needs an object of hate, right? No. I'm trying imperfectly, trying to experience the intensity of my moral emotions and commitments without acquiescing to hate. Dharma practice is purifying the nature of our love, of refining out these kind of ancient evolutionary entanglements. And we have this deep sense that our love needs to do something to the world. It needs to be efficacious. It needs to act on the world, change conditions. And then if it doesn't have the intended effect, plan B is hate. Plan C is nihilism, cynicism. But love was not meant to rescue samsara. And then, yeah, you say, maybe this isn't about the president or not just about the president. Yeah, you know, he is precisely Mara, precisely. Creed, Hayden delusion, in costume. And, there has always been and will always be precisely that. We humans absolutely love our greed, hate, and delusion. The world has endured unimaginably vast suffering, tears, it is said, that could fill the great ocean, right? The world will endure unimaginably vast suffering, tears filling more oceans. And in a way, this all seems unprecedented because our lifespan is perhaps 1 century rather than 20. Our moral machinery wasn't quite equipped for all of this, but we vow, somehow vow, may we train wisdom, love, and we join with the kind of lineage of care, of love that has already right alongside the ocean of tears, this lineage of love that has already accomplished staggering things. We join with it. And we look for the million places where our love can affect the world, does affect the world. Zvaclav Havel. We must divest ourselves of our egotistical anthropocentrism, our habit of seeing ourselves as masters of the universe who can do whatever occurs to us. We must discover a new respect for what transcends us, for the universe, for the earth, for nature, for life, for reality. Our respect for other people, for other nations, and for other cultures can only grow from a humble respect for the cosmic order and from an awareness that we are part of it, that we share in it, and that nothing of what we do is lost, but rather becomes part of the eternal memory of being, where it is judged. Offer this for your consideration.